As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
This is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today, Arsenal put in a dominant display. Are they one of, if not the best team in the country right now? We'll discuss issues for West Ham United and Leicester City. How good are Tottenham really? And also, do you think Brendan Rodgers will last at Leicester City? All that and more over the next hour on The Game. Hello again, welcome to The Game Podcast. I'm Hugh Woozencroft, alongside Tony Cascarino, Alison Rudd and Tom Clark. Looking back on a weekend which, of course, was slightly curtailed in terms of fixtures, but loads of good football to still discuss. And we begin with Arsenal, who put in a dominant display against Brentford, winning 3-0 in West London, to, I think, underline just how far they've come since the first game of last season, where they lost this fixture 2-0. Alison, you were there. You saw the change in Mikel Arteta and all of his team. It's just a different Arsenal. Are they now the second best team in the country, maybe after Man City? Maybe the best?
They're top of the table, so they are currently the best team in the country, aren't they? And yes, it's not just me that's seen the change. The whole world has seen the change because the cameras were on Mikel Arteta as he went through that angst-ridden phase of trying to get the team back on track after being humiliated in the three opening games of last season. And of course, because it all began on a Friday night under the lights at Brentford, they lost 2-0 at the start of last season. They were back at Brentford again. I mean, it's a shame they didn't have it exact parallel, but anyway. So they're back at Brentford again. And it was completely different, except for the slightly worrying thing is because Tony Cascarino, who sat on my left, has compared how Arsenal are playing now to how City play, which is a big compliment. The fact is, Arsenal had to work incredibly hard and went into the game not with that sense of entitlement that City get. There was a definite fear factor there, which Arteta, I think, quite cleverly, obviously the result proves it, cleverly didn't make that so that they became too nervous or imploded or whatever. He used the fact that had been their most embarrassing moment. So they were hyper-prepared, if you like. The fans were really up for it. It was a bit strange because the Arsenal fans were treating a game at Brentford as if it was, you know, the big one. It's almost, you know, North London derby proportions of anger from the stands and dissing Brentford. And you think, well, how low did they fall to feel that they had to put in so much effort to overcome Brentford? Fact of the matter is, Brentford were dreadful, really. They just didn't get out of third gear. They weren't the normal Brentford. So that made Arsenal look incredibly smooth. And I can see what Tony means by comparing them to City, because they had space and time to be slick because they weren't put under any pressure. Some teams just don't cope with an early kickoff. And it was a noon kickoff and it was cold. And there was just nothing. There was nothing inside the stadium. There was no passion, nothing at all. The players just couldn't get going. It was quite peculiar. I've not seen Brentford in the Premier League play. I've seen them play poorly, but I've always seen them play with pressure and passion. None of that was there. So yes, they did look incredibly impressive, but that's because they'd almost over-prepared for a team that didn't offer them much that they needed to overcome at all. But I will say, it sounds like I'm being negative about Arsenal. Watching Jesus in the flesh is a privilege. He isn't just about his goals. The way he approaches the game, it's like he loves it more than anyone in the universe. There's a joyousness about him. which is great. And I think we've seen not just the evolution of Arteta, but the evolution of Granit Xhaka, who I was there when he threw his armband to the floor 3 years ago. He wore the armband again on Sunday because Ødegaard was injured. And instead of it being, you know, something that might, I don't know, embarrass him or make him feel like he had to get stuck in too much, it was a sort of effortless, grown-up performance. It was there was a lot to praise, but I wouldn't read too much into over-preparing against a poor Brentford.
Tony, you put it in the Times, a City-like performance from Arsenal.
Yeah, I wouldn't be the first person to say that this weekend. I think we've got away from the fact that Odegaard wasn't playing, who's been terrific for Arsenal. And then you could also argue Zinchenko at left back didn't play. Tierney was really good in the game. I thought done brilliant. Vieira likewise. Arsenal did all the things that City do. They win the ball off you high up. They win it quickly. They move it quick. Everything they did was very City-like. And is it a bad comparison? Because this is very early doors, as in, you know, City have been doing this for 5 years. But what you can see, the intentions of Arteta and his team is to clone what City do. And they are doing it very well at the moment. And you can make teams look bad, you know, and they made Brentford look bang average. They didn't offer any threat in any shape or form. Wolves got beat 3-0 home by City at the weekend, quite comfortably, in a similar sort of way. And Wolves are a decent side, like Brentford are. Brentford were made to look very average by the way that Arsenal play the game now. And it feels like now Arteta's really got his team together with some incredible signings, because as Gabriel Jesus, what we just talked about, what Alisson was just saying, that he's added so much, and there is a real enthusiasm about every player that puts on an Arsenal shirt at the moment. And they might be getting carried away because they know, they know they're a good side, and they know they're a side that can go and win games on a regular basis. So I think Arsenal fans are looking at their present team and they're really proud of them, and they really are starting to trust them. And, you know, the performance at Old Trafford, yes, they lost the game, but there was a lot of good things in that game that showed you that Arsenal are a completely different side. And you said, you know, are they the second best team? Well, we know Man City are the team to beat, and they could win the league by 10 points. But there's a massive gulf from where Arsenal were and to where they are now. And I'm really looking forward to the North London derby, because I really feel it's going to be bragging rights in North London of who can come out on top. And I do think Arsenal look a slightly better team than Tottenham at the moment.
We'll come to that. We'll come to whether Tottenham are all that a little bit later on in the podcast as well. In a weird way, Tom, how much credit does Mikel Arteta really deserve? I mean, he's gone, he's worked with Pep Guardiola, and listen, it's not like he's taken a hint of Pep's style. Tony's telling us they're a carbon copy.
Yeah, absolutely useless. You've never rated him. it's not at all impressive to take your first job in management and take a team that were in dire straits like Arsenal and eventually build them up. One thing I would say, just finally on Tony's point about them being City-like, is that you see, like, Kieran Tierney, I thought it was fascinating watching him do what we've praised Zinchenko do this season and kind of roam into those central areas, which is not necessarily something that we'd have associated with Tierney's game beforehand, which again echoes the idea that City are a team, they're a system, they're a way of playing, and Arteta is able to find Odegaard's out, as Tony said, bring in Vieira, great, It all works, it all fits. Zinchenko's injured, no problem. Tierney plays. Even Ben White, who's looking pretty good at right back, like, I'm not sure many Brighton fans would have necessarily said, oh, he'll be a top four right back. He looks pretty good. He was bombing forward. I think the system to me seems to have clicked. And last season they said, you know, they kind of had a top layer system. They now seem to have added that. And Tony, you mentioned in your column as well, recruitment. So yeah, to take your point on, Hugh, maybe Arteta deserves no credit whatsoever, but the other people who do are, they seem to have got their recruitment right, don't they, Tony?
Because, yeah, absolutely.
That's something you mentioned that can make a huge difference. If you get your signings right, that's how you go up a level from where you were last season.
Yeah, and you take players that you know as well and you trust. And I think, you know, obviously, Jesus has come in and just been extraordinary. I can't believe that he's not in the Brazil squad now. His effort on the left side of the game on yesterday as well. It was a centre forward role. It was how much effort, and we know he can play. I saw him play against Real Madrid on the left wing, come left wing back, and done a brilliant job. He gets in positions that are so unselfish for the team to win the ball, and when it goes forward, he is making 50, 60 yard runs to get in forward positions. And I think everybody's been inspired by him at Arsenal. And he's come with a big smile, and he comes with a bit of a swagger of, I've got the Premier League winner title a few times here, and okay, I might not be the main man, but he really feels like he wants to be the main man for Arsenal as well.
Yeah, he's got that home at Arsenal at the moment. And I know Manchester City were great for him, but the responsibility seems to be relishing as well. And his goal, I think it was really well taken. Granit Xhaka got a lot of praise for the assist. And I know Alisson's highlighted him already. It was pointed out, you know, he's playing in a slightly more advanced role. He was able to roam a little bit more. That paid dividends. How big can Granit Xhaka be for Arsenal?
Do you know one of the biggest things you can do as a sportsman, and obviously we're talking about football here, is there ain't many people who win over crowds. That's really hard to do. Is, you know, the feeling of your fans or, you know, your club, get him out of the club, he's no good for us, you know, and you hear all this on radio stations, newspaper articles. He's changed everybody's opinion. But the one guy that believed him more than anybody was Arteta. Because Arteta could have quite easily said, you're not, well, we did, he wasn't his captain, but say, you're not only not my captain, you'll be out of the club. I, you know, go and look for another club. Tell your agent.
Well, Granit Xhaka already said he almost went to Roma, didn't he?
Yeah. And Arteta's kept him. Mm. And so you have to give, and you said earlier about, you know, what is Arteta, you know, how much has he achieved. But keeping Granit Xhaka and then making him become a slightly different player that many of us would not have thought he was capable of doing, well, he's proved so many people wrong. And Granit Xhaka has become now a player that is another leader in this particular. And there was one time, if you'd have said to me how many captains at Arsenal, I said, phew. I'm not sure, hardly anybody. Mm. You asked me that question 2 years ago. And now Granit Xhaka, adding Gabriel Jesus, adding other players within the team, Tierney and others, Ben White. They now feel like they've got five or six leaders on that football pitch.
That was quite astute of Arteta, actually, because Xhaka's dad was saying, oh, you should leave. This is too toxic for you here. They don't appreciate you. This is awful. So the people closest to him were saying, you should probably get out. And it would have been easy for Arteta to say, sure, you know, maybe this is the end of it. But he knew by giving him love when he needed love, he would have a proper soldier with him, wouldn't he? It's like someone leading men and thinking, well, who's going to fight for me? If I fight for him a little bit now, he will give it me back in the future. And that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah, I think
he is now fighting and doing exactly what Arteta wants him to do. So he might change his role slightly, tell him to dovetail here, do this, do not do that. Xhaka will always say yes, boss, because he looked after him at his lowest ebb when it would have been easy to get rid of him. But that's clever management, because he's probably the most loyal player he's got now.
Absolutely. I'd agree 100% on every level regards to that. Is, look, changing careers round, think of players in your, you know, if you said like Dele Alli and he's had his slide, and many, many others, it's not just on Dele Alli, but many others whose career is going downwards, and you reverse it and you manage to do that. You find it very hard in football to find how many people have actually achieved that.
Mm. I think at the time when he threw the armband to the ground, I don't think any of us thought he would ever, maybe if he continued to play for Arsenal, that's one thing, but would ever actually be given the captain's armband to lead them out again. So just to see him wear it and to perform so well was actually quite astounding from my perspective. Tom, are we looking at a team that could challenge, do you think?
I knew you'd throw that one to me. Why did I get that one? Honestly.
Well, they're top of the league.
Well, come on. Well, one thing we have learnt is that I went a season too early on Mikel Arteta being manager of the season, didn't I? But, you know, let's go early this time. He's done it, hasn't he? He's cracked it. He's smashed it. No, they're not going to challenge for the title, but...
Really?
No, I don't think so.
Pep Guardiola's allowing them to play City-like because that's gone now. City don't play like City
anymore. Well, true, yeah.
They are Gulliver in the land of Lilliput now.
Yeah, very well put, Alison. I definitely wouldn't have come up with a phrase like that. I don't think they're going to challenge, no. Does anyone think they're going to challenge?
No.
No, I think we all recognise the strength of City, and it's going to be...
Well, they could be second.
But they can be second and still not challenge for the title, can't they, with this City team? That, as Tony said earlier, City could win the title by 10, maybe more points. And look, we talked at the start of the season about Arteta and whether you know, progress would be getting in the top four. Would that be enough? It looks like that's going to be a serious, realistic opportunity for them to finish second, third, fourth, and that'll be a huge improvement.
Yeah, OK, all going well at Arsenal. A little bit disappointing.
What do you do, everyone? I want to know what you do. If you are Arteta for the North London derby, do you try and play the way you play, knowing that Spurs are so blooming good on the counter?
It's a good question.
Tony?
Yeah, well, I would always opt for don't worry too much about them, as in, this is what we do. Because I think, if you think of Liverpool, how they've achieved, you know, successful football and winning competitions by not worrying about when they had Man City. And I know Man City have won a number of titles in the recent years, but Liverpool at their best and doing what they do cause City problems. And I think Arsenal have to think like that when they play Spurs. It's, yes, we recognise how dangerous they are, but let's not stop doing what we are really good at. And we can cause them problems as well. I think you can get carried away about stopping opposition far too often. And so, yes, I would try and do the same things.
The other thing I'd say to that, Alison, is that players we haven't mentioned, like Saliba, Gabriel, Arsenal's defence seems much improved as well. So when you're quite rightly saying how brilliant Tottenham are on the counter-attack and players like Son, Kane getting into form, they've got a good defence now, Arsenal. So they can do, as Tony says, we're going to back ourselves, we're going to play our way. And we'll get the guys at the back to deal with it.
Tom, they nearly did it against City, didn't they, last season?
Yeah, they did.
They played brilliantly against City.
Yeah.
And they didn't play with fear of thinking, oh, City, let's just get everybody behind the ball. Mm. They were really unlucky not to get something out of that game at the Emirates last year.
Yeah, but the thing about City is, you know, you almost can play against them. They want to play. They'll let you play. Let's see who the better side is. I'm not sure Antonio Conte's approach with Spurs, particularly away from home in the Emirates, is going to be quite like that. Although we'll come to Tottenham a little bit later on, because that first half from Leicester City is maybe something that Mikel Arteta can pick up on if they do things a little bit more successfully. And I think they would, than Leicester did this weekend. I think they could get a positive result anyway, of course. Plenty of time to come until the North London derby with the international break on the way. Another positive result, though, this weekend from an Arsenal perspective. Another club in London, though, who aren't too happy at this point in time are West Ham United, who sit in the relegation zone, 5 defeats from their opening 7 games, beaten 1-0 at Goodison Park. Neil Mopey's first Everton goal was the difference. But what is the issue for West Ham United right now? Tom Clark, you can start on this one if you want.
Thanks very much. It feels a bit stale, doesn't it? When you look at the team sheet, when you look at the options that Moyes has got, yes, they brought in players like Scamacca, but I mean, he's clearly not settled right away, or Moyes doesn't have full faith in him because he's not starting him. He's bringing him off the bench, and his performance yesterday seemed to embody probably what a lot of the fans are feeling, which is huge frustration. You know, he ran around, he committed a few fouls, he looked a bit petulant, to be honest. He couldn't really get into the game. It feels like they need to do something. Moyes certainly perhaps needs to do something a little bit radical tactically, perhaps. You just look at that team sheet and you look at kind of Koufal going forward from right back, Rice and Souček in the centre of midfield, you're kind of like, we've seen this before. And this is something that we talked about in the season preview going into this season. They did it one season, amazing. They did it the second season, incredible. And you're like, can they do it again? The same methods, the same tactics, the same style, essentially the same group of players. It's proving hugely difficult. So I feel like perhaps they need to do something a little bit more bold. They've got some fixtures coming up. I think they've got Wolves and Fulham as the next.
Southampton.
Yeah. Southampton. So, you know, you've got 3 games there where I think perhaps Moyes, it's a huge cliche and it's far more nuanced than this, but, you know, maybe try 2 up top, maybe try something a bit more attacking to try and take the game to some of these teams who they can and should and would want to be beating.
I'm going to disagree with Tom.
How dare you?
I know, but it makes for better listening.
You think they've been good this season?
No,
Alison?
I don't. I think
that'd be a big opinion.
I think they've spent a lot of money, West Ham, and that we are seeing glimpses of the new signings. I think this is down to what sort of manager Moyes is. If you think about it, he spent a lot of time at Everton doing the same thing over and over again with the same personnel. And he came unstuck going into Manchester United because he had to do lots of new things and deal with new players and change his environment. And this has happened again with West Ham. If you look at when West Ham have done well under Moyes, it's been, you can predict the lineup. They play the same way. He has faith in the players he has faith in. He's been given some money. He's got new players. He's not very good at hitting the ground running. He's he's almost nervous about how to integrate. And even those players like Cornet, he's played in the Premier League before and you know what he can do. There's a nervousness about it. And I find it really weird that he keeps blaming, sometimes he blames the new signings for not being not being ready. And then he blames his existing players for not giving him what they gave him before, while at the same time saying, but we're very tired because of our European commitments. It's like he doesn't even know himself what he wants to convey as to what is wrong. And ultimately that's probably the thing you do as a manager, isn't it? You've had a strange season. You almost won, almost won a trophy. You've got a summer to work out why it didn't come off. Did you balance your resources properly? Did he give too much to Europe? I think they did actually probably put too many eggs in the European basket. And he's got it all over again this season. He doesn't seem to be learning from it. He's already using the Thursday night football as an excuse. This is not a manager who I think is on top of change.
Your reaction, Tony?
It's always difficult to assess David Moyes in the transfer market because, look, teams have recruitment teams that work hard on who is available and what the manager wants. Benrahma's struggled, really, since he's come from Brentford. Bowen was a big success, but was he... You know, he's very up and down type of player. He's not a silky winger, that does very special things at moments. So I always think Bowen's always a player that makes great runs, gets in good positions and can finish. That's how I see him. Scamacca has come in, again, scored goals. He played in the game at Villa Park. I think they won in the league. He started, but he's only started one Premier League game, which is really strange for me. It's like you've spent 30-odd million... And you've only started him once in the Premier League so far. So I don't quite understand.
It's because he's deeply conservative, Tony.
Yeah, yes. And well, this is my broader point. He loves to be conservative because if you look at someone like Craig Dawson, when he came in, Craig Dawson sort of fits David Moyes. You know what you get in. You're going to get a real honest centre-half, does all the ABCs of the game really, really well. But I'm never quite sure how it... But Paqueta's come in from Lyon, hasn't he? Paqueta's come in. And now he's a real technical player that sometimes you carry him as a bit of a luxury. And I don't think he really enjoys them sort of players sometimes. I mean, I'm pretty sure, I'd have to check this out, but when he got to Manchester United... I think Fellaini was his first signing. If he wasn't his first, he was definitely his second.
He was the big signing of that summer. Sixth choice central midfielder that Man United went for, I think. Fifth or sixth that they finally got over the line.
Because
the likes of Toni Kroos.
Yes, he liked him.
Yeah, because he trusted the way he played, but he wasn't really a Man United type of player. So we can all probably agree on that. But I do think he's uncomfortable in transfer markets. And it could be conservative, what Alisson said, but there's a part of me that I don't know how much he really embraces really good technical players, as he sees them as a bit of a luxury for the way I want to play. So he's a really hard manager to dissect and how he goes about his job, because let's face it, they were in relegation trouble and done brilliantly well, didn't keep him on. Why didn't the club keep him on first time? You could probably ask that question to yourself. They let him go and then he comes back because they get in trouble again. He gets them out of that trouble. Then they have a really good campaign last year and now investment comes, a huge, West Ham has spent quite a decent amount of money late in the transfer market, and then that's not quite worked out. And I still don't get how you can go, knowing you need a striker to compete with Antonio, but you could easily play Antonio on the left and you go Scamacca down the middle, and he started one Premier League game and only played European League games.
My turn for a question for Rudd now, after your how do you win the North London Derby? What does Moisey do then? He's got these players, he's got that run of games that I picked out, winnable games as they always say. I'm sure those other teams they're playing, they would disagree. What does he do with what he's got? How does he change it?
Well, he can't change who he is, can he? I mean, that's a mean question, because I think what we're seeing is what he inherently is, which is a cautious, conservative, mistrustful manager who likes to feel he's got players on side. They've got a fighting spirit. Everyone knows their role. It's not going to be good for him or the team for him to pretend to be something he's not. Absolutely. So, but maybe he just needs to be more open with his coaching staff, listen more to what their input is, because at the moment I think they're shrouded in doubt, and that isn't good. Because if you've got good technical players, as Tony's pointed out, there are a lot of good technical players. They're going to be inhibited if they feel any sense of what Tony says is true. So maybe he should, I don't know, hand over the team talk to the attacking players, get a fresh voice in, make them feel like they can express themselves. Because at the moment, I think their main problem is that they're inhibited because they played quite well once they've gone a goal down. Mm. And then you forget your normal inhibitions, yeah. Don't
well,
you?
They started running at Everton, didn't they?
Exactly.
And they threw Cornet on and Benrahma and started attacking.
Benrahma hit the woodwork. So it could have been we could be talking about them actually equalising and then snatching a late winner and it all being about Everton this morning. But it's that in a way sums up that if they're not starting like that, that comes from the manager.
Can I just make one quick point as well? And you know, you've got a new captain in Declan Rice, who I've always considered he's a player that 8 or 9 out of 10 every week. He's had a really indifferent start to the season. You know, he could easily be England captain further down the line. He's a tremendous player. But I watched him against Brighton at the London Stadium. He was really poor. I couldn't believe I was watching Declan Rice because he's a talented lad. He got great energy, you know, huge stature as he plays the game. And he sort of fallen into the trap of his performances have been, in my opinion, of him, low key.
I think there's a bit of fatigue with Declan Rice. Mm. I think there was a lot placed on him in terms of West Ham being successful last season. And in every game, he basically started. I mean, he barely got a rest throughout the season. I think he's not the only one. He's not the only player who I think, I know it sounds weird, that is a little bit fatigued this season. I know we spoke about Trent Alexander-Arnold before. I do think there are some leggy players in the Premier League who haven't really hit the ground running at the start of this season. I do think it's a bit of fatigue. They need him. I would change things if I was David Moyes, though. I wouldn't drop Declan Rice, don't worry. But a three at the back for me wouldn't be the worst thing in the world at this point in time.
He's done that already.
I know.
He's played three, he's played all.
Yeah, sorts. I know. But I do think the reason that I do that is because I would start Scamacca. I'd just say, look, we'll give you a run. Let's see what you can do. But you probably need bodies closer to him the way that he's played so far. It doesn't look like he's going to be a Didier Drogba type. Not yet. Let's put it that way. So get players near him. You've got some, again, Cornet, I would start because he's just had that X factor in the Premier League. You know, he's played for Burnley, hasn't needed a lot in terms of service to produce. If he gets the ball near the penalty box, he seems to get a shot off. He's obviously extremely quick. You've got Bowen on the other side. How you fit Paqueta in the creative, I think, play of Paqueta. Lanzini's not in the team at the moment. You've got Fornals, who can, I think he can throw himself about in the midfield a little bit, but also he's a creative player, likes to get on the ball. There doesn't seem to be, in terms of the recruitment, a like for likes.
No.
It just doesn't.
Why do you think, and this is for all of us here, what was the thinking behind buying Paqueta?
He's just an incredibly good player who raises the quality level. That's it. I mean, that can be the only reason.
But they had also missed out on a player who was on the opposition, Onana. By all accounts, they wanted him. And it was funny watching him playing and Everton in general. Maybe this is the tale of the copycat managers, because you've got Frank Lampard, known for his carefree attacking football at previous jobs and not being very astute defensively. He's turned into David Moyes, hasn't he? It was incredible. He signed a workhorse striker in Neil Mopay. He signed James Tarkowski, who's basically exactly what Tony said about Craig Dawson. And there was that incredible moment when they were 1-0 up and the whole of Goodison was rising and uproarious. I know it was Onana, I think, and they had a counter-attacking opportunity. And he crossed the halfway line and went, nope, no, I'm not doing that. Turned around and there was this like, they didn't boo, but everyone went, oh, fine, okay, I can see why you've done that, but it's a bit boring, really. Everton have turned into Moyes' West Ham, haven't they?
Well, and add one point. Everton haven't scored more than once in any game so far
this
season. Exactly,
1-0 to the Everton.
And they've paid a price for getting 1-0 up at times as well, because they've done exactly what Tom's saying.
Yeah. You look at the bench, I think Ogbonna and Dawson, who've been out with injury, were on the bench, but they're obviously not fit enough to start. I think Tilo Kehrer hasn't had a good start. I would play three at the back, though. I think they've got enough, but I just look at Emerson on the bench and think, you probably want him on the pitch, and he could play probably better as a wing back. I don't know. I don't know. I do think he needs to try something. He needs to get, for me, Paqueta and Scamacca into the starting lineup. I just think you need to freshen the team up. It's not working.
I'm making this a theme of the show. I'm going to ask Alison another question now. those three games that we've talked about coming up, if he doesn't get, you know, two wins or a win and a draw, are we seriously starting to talk about Moyes' future at West Ham?
They're Wolves, Fulham, Southampton and Bournemouth in the next four games, by the way.
Oh, if he was to lose all four, then that would be a disaster. Yeah.
But only one win and a draw and two defeats?
Such are the fine margins of one's fate in this business.
I don't know. What do you think, Tony? 4 points from Wolves, Fulham, Southampton and Bournemouth. Would that be enough?
Well, I always feel West Ham, the type of club they are, their supporters can get very vocal about how, you know, much disharmony or how angry they can get at a football club. And sometimes the owners at West Ham sort of, you know, they seem to react to that. I think he's still got a little bit of money in the bank. I do think they'll pick up points as well in this next period. So
yeah.
I don't think the problem is now. I think it will be after, they break up for the World Cup where they are.
Yeah.
And that period of, you've spent, best part of 60-odd million to bring two players in. And so you have to find a way of that investment to get them into the side that suits everybody. And I don't know, I just always feel he makes me feel like luxury players... He always is a little bit uncomfortable around, implementing them into his team.
Those teams I mentioned, by the way, four of the next five. The other game's Liverpool away from home, so I didn't put it in because I don't think he'll get judged on his result.
That's the easiest game of the lot. They're rubbish.
His result at Anfield. He has changed the formation and the personnel in every Premier League game so far. So although we're saying, what does he need to do? Maybe does he just need to settle on what he wants to do? Because it can't help the players.
Is that because of Europe? You know, they've played a number of European games. Has he changed because he's felt he's needed to change?
Well, yeah,
because physically, so...
But that shows you that the recruitment's not like for like then. Because if every time you put different players into the team, you need to change the formation and the style of play, that points towards the recruitment not being ideal. As I said, no like for likes.
No.
We'll see. I think there's a lot of good players at West Ham United. I just wonder whether... And you know this, Tony, expectation changes very quickly. They've now become a club where... 18 months ago we were saying, could they get into the top four? So the expectation of fans, Europe is a minimum, I think now. If they don't reach Europe this year, what happens to David Moyes?
Well, it also depends on, how you get beat, style of play. I mean, it's very hard to be...
You lost 1-0 to Everton.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't score against Everton.
Yeah, I know, but there's always a bigger picture, and the bigger picture for David Moyes is that he has... The laws of the game, nearly all teams doing well are attack-minded sides who go and get goals. It's very hard to find pragmatic teams. You go across Europe, you look at Serie A and you watch Atalanta, now top of Serie A. What do they do? They play a very attack-minded style. So it's very hard to be successful or with pragmatism in the game. And that's what David Moyes is.
Okay. All right. Just got to say some positives for Everton. They've only conceded 6 goals in the opening 7 games. That's the second best defensive record in the Premier League. So Frank Lampard's clearly doing something right.
Good signings. I mean, come on, Cody and Tarkowski are good. They're good. I think you dissed Tarkowski a bit there before. Actually, Tom, I think he's excellent.
You're forgetting my love of Burnley. When you remember Burnley when they're in the Premier League, Burnley.
Who are they?
Then me and James Tarkowski. They were my super top mates. No, absolutely love them. And you're right that they are sensible signings. The problem with Everton, in a similar way to West Ham, is that they've made these signings and improved as a team that are not going to be in the relegation scrap. What happens when we come back from the World Cup and you start going, yeah, well, we want to get a bit higher up the table now? That'll be the problem. And as Tony says, it's all well and good me making jokes about 1-0 to the Everton. They do need to kind of progress. And there was that slightly fraught 20 minutes at the end where they had promising moments going forward. I think Damari Gray looked really threatening in behind and flashed a kind of chance across the front face of goal, and Mopay didn't go for it. They need to be getting that second goal in these games.
I think survival was the target at the start of the season.
Yeah, I agree. It can be with those kind of signings.
Take it. Forget the signings, just... The club could have gone one of two ways, over the last few years with all the money that's been spent. It looks like it's been very much negative. If they finish even upper bottom half, you'd be delighted with 12th, 13th, 14th.
Yeah. Just on one point, because this is an important one, he's done exactly the same as what Eddie Howe did. He's changed his whole back four. You look at, he's got a new back four. You know, gone are the days of Seamus Coleman or Holgate's been left out, Keane's been left out. He's changed the whole back four, which, they were conceding a lot of goals, a year ago. You look at even when Lampard towards the end, they were conceding on a regular basis. He's said, he's looked at it and gone, I need a completely different back four. And that's what really Eddie Howe did at Newcastle.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much. More still to come on the Game Podcast. Remember, if you're enjoying it, leave us a review, like us, but make sure you're subscribed. Most importantly, we'll be talking Tottenham Hotspur next.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Son Heung-min scored a remarkable 13-minute hat-trick as Tottenham beat Leicester 6-2 to move up to third in the Premier League table. They're level on points, though, with Manchester City. There is still, though, a debate about the quality of the performances from Tottenham Hotspur. That's despite scoring six at the weekend and an unbeaten start to the season. So, how good are they really? Tony Cascarino, where are Tottenham right now?
Well, they've got an amazing forward line, and we don't have to name them all, but they have, and who are going to score goals on a regular basis. I mean, look, Leicester are the perfect opposition for anybody at the moment. And let's not kid ourselves. The week before they got, you know, the last previous game got beat by Brighton 5-2 and looked like they were going to ship goals at an alarming rate. This was no different at the weekend. Now, they were in the game, Leicester. You know, 2-2. Well, it was the 47th minute and went 3-2 to Spurs. But that moment that happened, Leicester looked like they were going to go 4-2 and 5. And it happened all so quickly. Now, I was disappointed in Tottenham at Chelsea. I thought they were really poor. Because that if this is a team that's going to challenge for the title and they end up getting a goal that could have been disallowed and get a 2-2 draw at the Bridge, but was clearly outplayed by Chelsea, dominated in every area. This game at the weekend, it was nip and tuck for a while, ended up being runaway winners. I watched the game in sport against Sporting in midweek as well, and they were the better team and were beaten by two really good goals late on by Sporting. I think there's more to come from this Spurs team. There has to be. Where would the improvement come? I sort of feel that defensively, Davinson Sanchez played and didn't have one of his best games. And there's no way Romero can be on the bench and he can play. To me, they're different quality players. And I think that will be the theme for them being better and more assured defensively, because they are going to score a shedload of goals. They are. They just got that much ability in their forward line.
Play 3-5-2. Make sure you play Bissouma. Control midfield. Make Son and Kane feel as happy as they've ever felt before, and they'll be absolutely fine. It's very simple. I don't know why he's meddled so much, really.
Okay, so where does Kulusevski come into it? Where would he play?
Super sub.
Really?
Yeah.
in the 3-5-2. So where's the creative force? You've started Yves Bissouma. I take it it's not him.
Kane. I mean, they've got enough intelligence at the back to start any sort of move. But we've seen what happens with Spurs. Kane drops deep. He encourages someone to play in the ball deep. Son makes the run. Wham, bam. And you don't worry about being caught on the break because you've got someone like Bissouma and his minions to soak it up. That was the change that was made. It wasn't just that Son had a point to prove. That was the change that was made in this game. Because Tony's absolutely right. Leicester didn't look too dreadful against them. They were almost poor. It's not quite, but they were almost. Leicester scored. You go back to what they were, really, I think, which is relying on Kane and Son's double act.
Okay, where does that leave them, though? Because that doesn't make them necessarily a better side than they were last season. I mean, that's the same attacking force that we've seen, and we were expecting more from Tottenham. Will that make them...
Why would you know that? That's fantastical and greedy, because Son and Kane, everybody in the land would like to own them both as a pairing, and you've got them.
Yeah, but
you don't have to be clever about it.
If you could get more out of the other nine players, you might go and win a trophy. The point is, they look like, even though they scored six...
You just have to make... You know you're going to score. Those two players, you're going to get goals. The rest of them, built around Bissouma, you've got the solidity you need. That's all you need to do. You need to win 1 or 2-0.
It hasn't been the recipe for winning the Premier League for some time.
Didn't have Bissouma. And they weren't relaxed about playing three at the back, which I think most people who've watched Spurs think they look more comfortable with three at the back anyway.
No, I agree. But I don't know. I maybe expect... And again, very strange saying it off the back of scoring six goals. But in particular, that first half performance, as bad as Leicester are, I think they found it quite comfortable to hurt Tottenham Hotspur. I didn't see the same level of control over games, and not just against Leicester City, but so far this season.
Bissouma wasn't on the pitch in the first half.
That Tottenham should have. So you think that's the difference?
Well, no, but there was an element of Leicester's style which was reckless, but enabled them to cause problems. Madison loved the game. He was absolutely having a field day because he was allowed to sit in a position that didn't rely too much on dropping deep and getting into the defensive areas of the game, which is not his biggest strength. But when it came to him, he found himself with 5 yards to get on the ball and look, get his head up, find a pass. Harvey Barnes was terrific down the left. He kept making runs. Dakar's always an outlet with his speed. And I thought that it was one of them games you can look at and go, well, Leicester did make a match of it. They did, but there wasn't the element of... The forwards need to stop the opposition. And they made no real effort, for me, watching the game, of stopping Tottenham in certain areas of the pitch.
I am both fantastical and greedy, because I believe that this Tottenham team should be better, and I want to see more than the 6 goals they scored the weekend. No, I'm joking. I just want to see more of a dominant, controlling football team. I've spoken about it so many times in the past. I love Antonio Conte, but so far I see a Tottenham team that I think is a beatable side, even though they're unbeaten so far against the best opposition in the league.
I'm hoping I'm going to jump in here on behalf of all Tottenham fans and say we're all having a bit of a giggle, aren't we? They're third. They've got the same number of points as Manchester City.
But are they good?
No, but Hugh, I think...
Hugh,
I think what you're doing is you're kind of retrospectively judging them based on all their pre-season hype. I know, Conte, they're going to be the third team. They're going to be the challengers. The fact is, they are the third team. They're quite literally third in the Premier League. They're on the same number of points as Manchester City. It's probably never been this exciting to be a Tottenham fan in terms of the options they've got, in terms of the fact that we can have the arguments and debates whether Alisson thinks Kulusevski should be a super sub and they should go for Bissouma, or whether I think that Richarlison's going to be a superstar this season and play a big role. But also the fact, Alisson, Son's been poor this season, I think. Before scoring a hat-trick off the bench, it looks great, I don't think he's been great this season. And I also thought it was quite telling he did a kind of shush silence celebration when he was scoring these goals, which I'd wondered whether is a bit pointed, like, don't slag me off, I'm still world class, which he is. But isn't that fantastic? They scored 6 goals. They absolutely blew Leicester away in the second half. Yes, they were poor, but they're third. It's never been this exciting to be a Tottenham supporter. Are they going to challenge for the title? No. Are they going to be like Arsenal, competing for second, third, fourth? Yes, definitely. And that's brilliant.
I like Perisic as well.
Great signing. I think his delivery.
Yeah, his deliveries and just experience of playing. I always remember watching him in the World Cup semi-final when Croatia played England and thinking, well, England are winning now and what will happen? And he changed. He went from one side to the other and then he got on the ball more. And he just realised what he had to do in a game to make a difference. And I think he's already done that enough for Tottenham where you can go, well, you can play as a wing back or you can play as a wide left. And his delivery, like Tom said, is exceptional with his left foot. And he will sometimes come on his right foot and pick out a pass. So I think he's been a big addition. And that goes again to a manager that knows him. You know, knows what he's getting, trusts him and thinks he can deliver for him. And I felt he's made an impact at Spurs, not to the levels of some other players that have come in, but I think a very important player.
Got to talk about Brendan Rodgers very quickly at Leicester City. 6 defeats in a row, 22 goals conceded after 7 games for Leicester City. I mean, I could ask whether you guys think this is the end for Brendan Rodgers or whether you feel there is a genuine concern now that they will be relegated. You can answer whichever you want.
By the time people listen to us, he'll be gone.
You think he's gone now? Definitely.
No one's going to sack anybody before the end of the period of mourning. But, you know, he'll be gone very soon.
You don't think he gets to the next game, which is an absolute mouth-watering clash at the bottom of the table against Nottingham Forest?
No, because you've got the international break and the chance to bed in someone. People who cover Leicester a lot, the way Brendan Rodgers phrases what's going wrong, he's making it clear. It's almost at every briefing, he's finding another reason and he's not doing that thing where the manager says, like Arteta did when it went pear-shaped, saying, it's me, I'm the one, I have to fix this. There doesn't seem to be that he's at the point where he wants to try and fix it. It's the point where he feels he'd like to leave on his own terms.
Do you agree he'll get fired, Tony?
I'd be amazed if he stays. There's too many decisions that have happened at Leicester and I just... Look, you lose a Fofana, you lose him. You're a big fee and, you know, he left him, pushed him aside a bit and didn't, you know, and I didn't think he handled that well. And the lad's been given an incredible opportunity of joining, you know, a big club in Chelsea, been very successful. He knew it was going to happen. It always felt, well, this is inevitable. But I still didn't quite like the handling of the way that Fofana left. And, you could say, well, he skipped training. But I just felt strange things have happened with players. I will never get in a million years how Brendan Rodgers allowed Schmeichel to leave the football club. If you really believe that he's worse than Danny Ward, then, that's not a football manager to me.
Well, he deserves to be sacked if that's the case, yeah, doesn't he? Let's be honest. If Danny Ward's better than Kasper Schmeichel...
But maybe it's a financial thing. Yeah, maybe
they want Schmeichel's wage bill off the books. Yeah.
You then give Vardy a new 2-year deal at 35, nearly 36. This doesn't add up. He was let go for £1 million. Are you really telling me Leicester are in such financial difficulty they could allow a keeper who's got this season on his contract, who's been in service for 11 years and has been a real hero? And by the way, there wasn't no fanfare about Schmeichel going. He was just allowed to leave. It was very quiet. And I don't get that transfer because that makes no sense to me at all. And I don't believe Brendan Rodgers should have allowed that to happen, even if it said, we keep him to the end of this season. And it was mentioned that, he got a new 3-year deal at Nice. And we'll just say to him, you can go to Nice at the end of this season. You know, you don't let him go for £1 million. Really? You know, there are obviously some issue because Schmeichel didn't really say anything when he left the football club. A club he's served for 11 years, he's won the Premier League with? I don't get that. I really don't get that transfer. And I might be making a mountain out of a molehill.
No, but it's indicative of a club that isn't being run properly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the bigger point. And if you really believe Danny Ward was your number one and he was better than Schmeichel, well, then you've been on the moon for the last 10 years.
But it puts them in an incredibly difficult and almost sad position, doesn't it, really, Leicester, when you think of where they were and winning trophies, and we were talking about them being the team to break the Big Six dominance. And they had Brendan Rodgers as this incredibly exciting coach, progressive manager. And now if, as we believe, they're going to sack him at some point, where do they go from here when they're bottom of the table and in a relegation scrap?
They want Thomas Frank.
Well, that's a big
everybody
ask,
wants. Everybody
we all
wants
want Thomas
Frank.
Frank.
Everybody wants Thomas Frank.
The game
Frank.
Podcast
should we get him
Thomas
on? Because he's so lovely.
That's a big ask, though. I mean, you're not going to go to Leicester if you're Thomas Frank.
No,
are you?
You're not. But that's who they'd want.
In a way, I think it would be sad if he was fired. It's very clear that things aren't going right. 6 defeats in a row, obviously. You've won an FA Cup. You've finished 5th twice. You've shown that you've got the potential to be a great manager at the football club. Why hasn't it bought him more time?
I don't know. There's, I don't know why. And look, there's some people in the media that don't have as much love given to them because of the way they conduct themselves at times. And I think Brendan Rodgers ticks that box.
Okay.
I could allude more, but I don't want to get
into trouble. No. Enough said.
Some people have had parties when they, you know, Brendan Rodgers left Liverpool.
Okay, all right, guys. I get it. We'll see what happens with Brendan Rodgers' future at Leicester City. I'm not going to say it would be harsh, but you didn't want this story to end in that way. But yeah, it's been good so far. And by the time you listen to this, who knows? Maybe Leicester have made a change. One club pretty happy with their manager at the moment is Fulham, though. They picked up another 3 points this weekend, this time with a 3-2 win at Nottingham Forest. Maybe the most entertaining game of the weekend. Fulham sit in the top six. They're another championship side in the past few seasons who are managing to make the grade to step up to the Premier League and bridge the gap. Now, some are saying that this is the result of a few seasons of parachute payments. We've seen, though, with Norwich City, who are a bit of a yo-yo club, it doesn't necessarily, you know, mean that you're going to make the grade. So what have Fulham done this year that you think makes them a side that could stay up, probably will stay up from what we've seen?
Well, first of all, we know they're going to be all right, because Marco Silva's gone back to his, I'm a proper Premier League manager and I will wear my, I've spent all night at the casino outfit, where he looks slightly dishevelled and totally in charge of his destiny. he just looks like he's, if he didn't do that straight away, and he didn't do it when he was in the Championship, they have arrived. They are play. You listen to any post-match or indeed pre-match interview with him or anyone connected, well, any of the players, and they talk about not being scared of the Premier League. They're going to play the type of football they want to play. They play with a freedom which you don't often get with a promoted team, unless you laugh at them for being naive, and they're pulling it off. It's amazing. And I have so much admiration for Tim Ream, because of all the players who were written off, he was the one who got, even Fulham fans were saying, yeah, we've got promoted, which is great, but we're going to go down if we keep Tim Ream at the back, because that's what happens. Tim Ream's very good in the Championship. We keep him on and we go down because he's completely exposed because of his lack of pace. What has he done? What has he done? He's amazing. I mean, he doesn't have the pace, but they don't play such a high line that it matters that often. They are, and when he brings the ball out, he distributes it like he's a Maldini figure, and he's a fantastic captain. I do watch him quite closely because I'm very fond of him when I watch Fulham, and the way he gets the team all working together and that sense of camaraderie, it is fantastic. They play with no fear. And because the results have gone well, they can continue to play with no fear and they'll be absolutely fine.
There's an intensity as well. I think that's what's quite telling, I think, in comparison to other Fulham teams in the Premier League, where they've been a bit nice. They've been a bit kind of wishy-washy. There've been lots of passing moves. You know, they've quite often been near the top of the statistics for passing, you know, passing completion and all that kind of stuff. But this is a really intense team. And those goals, I mean, what was it? 54, 57, 60, bang, bang, bang. And the celebrations as well, particularly those two second ones, Palhinha and Reed, the finishing and then the celebrations in with the fans. Like, it feels like Silva's really got them kind of intense in terms of both their attitude and the play on the pitch. Do you not think, Tony?
Yeah, look, on Friday night, there was Villa versus Southampton, two teams that have really sort of established themselves as Premier League sides. And then you had Forest coming up and against Fulham who'd come up. And I tell you what, there was way more quality in the game for us against Fulham. I like the two fullbacks. I think Tete and Robertson have done really, really well. I mean, Robertson handled Salah in the opening game of the season brilliantly. And I, you know, they set the tone. That performance we saw in the first hour against Liverpool, well, Liverpool should have lost that game. I thought they were fantastic energy. And like we're saying, with players that have been trusted at the football club, they feel like there was a number of times, and I know they scored three goals up for us, but there was a number of occasions in the match where they got three or four people in the 18-yard box. That's going to get them goals. Because if you want to look at goals columns and you look at how many teams get a lot of goals, most of them, all of them are sides that get a regular amount of players in the 18-yard box. And in some ways, it's really weird because Marco Silva was renowned for having attacking teams. And at times it didn't. Everton, it certainly didn't work out. You know, when he couldn't produce a team that looked effective. And this has fitted perfectly. And Paulinho, that's come in, has done really well. I really think that that's a side with a huge amount of energy. And that is shone for me.
A lot is made about the recruitment of promoted sides. And obviously we saw Nottingham Forest on the pitch, 22 new signings. They had 7 new signings in their starting 11. Fulham had 5, though. And obviously Fulham, a lot of people were unhappy with the way that they recruited massively in the way that Forest have this season, a couple of seasons back, and it didn't go for Fulham on that occasion. You look at it now and it's weird because it does, you know, you saw Willian out there, but he looked like he was a settled part of the team. Mm. You know, he's just come back from Brazil, for example. I don't know why, but it seems like the recruitment has just, it just looks quite stable at Fulham this summer.
Well, it looks like they're players that Silva wants and that they fit how he wants to play, whereas perhaps in previous iterations of Fulham in the Premier League, it's been a bit scattergun. It's been a bit, let's pick up this talented player from Europe for 30 million that no one's really ever heard of, who won't quite succeed. But there's also the Tim Ream factor, as Alison said. There's a lot of players proving people wrong, not just Ream, not just Mitrovic. But in terms of signings, I mean, Andreas Pereira, I think I said on this podcast that he wasn't the kind of player that you'd want to sign going into the Premier League. It's a classic Fulham signing, I think I said. I'm going to get in my apology now because he looks great. He looks really energetic. He's kind of embodying that intensity, but in a very technical and classy way in the central midfield. So it all seems to be coming together for Silva, but it seems to fit what he wants to do.
Yeah, 4 of the 5, funnily enough, in that Fulham starting lineup who are new signings, have played football in the Premier League. Yeah. You look at the bench, Carlos Vinicius, although he was on loan a year at Spurs, he's played in the Premier League. Dan James as well, their 2 signings on the bench, along with Mbabu, who, okay, he hasn't, but you get it. In fact, he was at Newcastle, wasn't he? Mm. So, in fact, there you go. A few players that know English football, maybe that is a difference as opposed to those players that you mentioned for a bit of a scattergun approach.
And they've also escaped from the Tom Kearney dilemma, which was, he was injured so often that every game he missed or went off, there was this sort of sense of gloom hung over them because, oh, he's our one good passer of the ball. He's there, but they've managed to move on and say, come on, we can't rely on Tom Kearney anymore.
João Paulinho, by the way, for 10 million quid. Oh, you just wish the recruitment at some of the big clubs
don't
was
say
just
it. Don't say it. They're not playing. You can't bring them up.
It was just a little bit better.
And everyone's looking at Sporting. You think, why didn't they? Yeah,
Watching them against Spurs last week, there's a few there now you'd want to take. And also on Paulinho, he will hold the record for the most yellow cards this season.
Oh, yeah? All right.
He'll be up there. He commits so many fouls. And
he jumps into the crowd as well, which he's always going to get you on. I quite like that, though.
Just have a look how many yellow cards he's going to get.
So an early prediction from Tony Cascarino.
I liked that he jumped into the crowd. Yeah. I liked that he ran the wrong way and then was like, no, I'm not celebrating in that direction. Our fans are over there. Pushed all of his teammates out of the way, jumped into the crowd,
gave
5 middle-aged blokes a hug. That's what it's all about.
It's that intensity, isn't it? But very quickly, as we're talking about Brendan Rodgers, like, Steve Cooper's going to be in trouble if he keeps going like this at Nottingham Forest, especially with their owner.
Yeah,
I feel sorry for him. I mean, he said, look, we're obviously playing catch-up. We've got so many new players. We're trying to find a rhythm. But it's, you know, you're talking about that scattergun approach. It's so disjointed. You see some players who've come from the Championship, you think, is he going to give them a chance in the Premier League, maybe to prove their worth? Obviously, they know English football. And then you've just got this, it's just, you know, you got a player that was playing Champions League football at Atalanta. It just looks so disjointed. You don't know where the harmony in that team can come from.
With an owner that is pretty trigger happy, Steve Cooper's got no chance. He's got no chance. I don't know how he's going to make this work, because the moment you go for a dreadful run, and they've just had that. I really, look, they go Leicester away, isn't it? The next game.
The hilarious fixture of the season.
El Sacico, the new El Sacico. will they both make it through?
Term? They're not going to make it that far, according to Alison Rudd. But when you talk about signings, and we talked about Silva and players that fitted and how you would want to, go back to that game against West Ham when, you know, Forest had still made loads of signings, but they hadn't made all the signings yet. And you think about players like Lewis O'Brien in midfield, Harry Toffolo, who played left wing back, you know, they seem to be players that were like Cooper players, who he wanted. And then they go and add more players on top of that. And you come a bit further down the line and he's thinking, well, we've just spent 20 million on this guy. I've kind of got to play him. So the O'Briens and the Toffolos drop out of the team and you look a little bit less Steve Cooper-like.
Jesse Lingard was on the bench Saturday, wasn't he?
Yep.
you know, already into season, they've spent a hell of a lot of money. Okay, not on a transfer fee, but taking him to Forest.
Yeah, but players have gone there for the dosh. They haven't gone there for the project. That's going to be part of the problem.
Well,
you look at it and you're like, you've got Jesse Lingard on the bench, Lewis O'Brien, who came on and scored, Toffolo, Surridge, Kouyaté, Emmanuel Dennis, who, of course, had a great
20
season.
Million.
And you're like, how are they going to fit these players? They've got some very good players, but into a system that fits, get that relationship out on the pitch, keep them happy and get some form.
It's remarkable they played as well as they did actually against Fulham, to be honest. Because, I mean, as Tony pointed out, there was a lot of quality and it wasn't just from Fulham. There was some nice stuff from Forest. So I think Cooper, I actually thought, okay, they lost, but Cooper's done a brilliant job actually getting a game of football going here.
Well, I've said in all the clubs I've ever played for, or even can remember in my 18 years as a professional footballer, that I've never seen a club make so many transfers. You know, okay, I get it. You lost a lot of players. I understand that. But can you really inject 22 players into a squad?
Yeah, it's
ridiculous. Just think that's just so crazy bonkers that I just can't imagine how that works.
I have no idea how they thought it was going to work.
Logistics of getting players into new homes or finding them this. And I mean, it must have been an absolute crazy scenario.
The issue is Steve Cooper's, he's not going to walk away from the job, but it's almost like such a hospital pass in terms of the recruitment. He couldn't have been sitting in the office on the final week, been saying, yeah, sign him, sign the other one. We need him. We need it. There's absolutely no way.
Do you not think his...
Well, he'd never been on the training
sounds different
ground.
And his body language is different.
Yeah, I do.
This is not a man who's... He knows he's got a lot on his plate.
Yeah, let's put it that way. We'll see if Brendan Rodgers and Steve Cooper make it through to face one another next time out in the Premier League at the end of this international window. One thing I did want to quickly mention to you guys, on Friday night, I was at Villa Park, Aston Villa against Southampton, which I have to say is without doubt the worst football match I have ever seen. I actually could not believe that you could describe it as Premier League quality players, because the decision making was so poor, the execution was so poor, the style of play was so poor. If they got like three or four passes together, either team, without losing it, you were surprised. Your jaw was on the floor. It was pinball. It was ugly. It was horrendous. And I actually texted a mate halfway through and I was like, this is worse than schoolboy football. So I wondered what the worst game you guys have ever seen, maybe in the flesh, ever watched was. It'll come to your mind. Alison, I know it sticks out immediately. You're going to have one.
Well, it involves Tony Cascarino, sort of.
Boom, boom.
No, not really. I mean, I'm sure he'd have made a huge difference if he'd actually been on the pitch. It's Marseille v Red Star Belgrade in 1991. Champions League final. I had badgered my mother, who does not like football. I said, I can guarantee you, Mum, I've watched these teams. Red Star can play beautiful football. So I said, no, sit down, I'll make you a cup of tea. We're going to watch the Champions League final. And it was the most, nothing happened at all. No one shot, no one passed, no one did. They just wandered around being rubbish till there was a penalty shootout. I was embarrassed because I'd said, I know it's going to be a fantastic match, but you can get that wrong. But for it to be a complete, you know, reverse and be probably the worst Champions League final in the history of Champions League and European Cup finals, I got it wrong, and it took her about another, I don't know, 20 years to trust me to watch another football match. Mm. But Tony Cascarino was not on the pitch.
Not on the pitch.
Why weren't you on the pitch? Why weren't you on the pitch?
I wasn't there in 91.
Weren't you?
No, I joined in 94.
Pretty good excuse, actually, to be fair.
Okay. Pretty decent.
Can I give mine?
Yeah.
My game? This is quite funny because in 1986, I remember sitting down as a professional footballer and watching the Champions League, which was the old European Cup final. And it was Barcelona versus Steaua Bucharest. And it was in Barca, the final. And I remember watching it. And I watched this Steaua Bucharest team, literally, I'd say park buses. I'd say they were Mark II trucks at the back of their team. And they just stopped everything that Barcelona did. And I remember thinking, I hope I never play in a game like that where you just defend every position on the pitch and you offer nothing going forward. And it ended up 0-0. It went to penalties and Steaua Bucharest won the trophy. So they're the European Cup Champions League winners. Mm. And years down the line, I end up playing for Laszlo Bolonyi who was the central midfielder for Steaua Bucharest that night. And I remember talking to him about that game and saying, that is honestly the worst game I've ever watched. And he went, it's the only way we could have won it was penalties. We could not have beaten them in Barca unless we played a system that was basically 11 behind the ball the whole game and we would never give them any space. And it worked a treat. And that always stood out to me. I know he played for the manager of Steaua Bucharest, but it was, honestly, this game would have sent you asleep after about a minute and a half because you could see the intentions of Steaua Bucharest on that night.
You lot do not know you're born, honestly.
mine's a Champions League final as
European
well.
European football, Champions League. Hugh, you talked about Villa Southampton. That had a goal in it. What are you on about? You two talking about European nights, huge atmospheres, great occasions. Macclesfield 0, Lincoln City 0. Tuesday, 30th of March, 2004. I went on a school night, and let's just say I wish I'd stayed home and done my homework because it was abysmal. I don't even think there was a shot for either team. Dreadful, dreadful game. Me and my dad still talk about it. It's the most dull thing we've ever seen.
But the thing is, Champions League finals have that layer of expectation. So I think when they're...
There was expectation on that Tuesday night, Hugh, as we drove across to Macclesfield. Come on, we took our place behind the goal in the standing area. There was expectation, mate. Don't you worry.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, I would have said, and again, it's probably because of the expectation, the 2003 Champions League final between Juventus and AC Milan, which had loads of beautiful tricks and flicks, no quality of football, no real chances, went to penalties as well. Absolutely horrendous. At Old Trafford, actually, I had so much expectation. I just watched it, and all these brilliant players produced absolutely nothing on the night. Honestly, it was like all those people that say, oh, Serie A's boring. That was the game for them to say, see, we were right. So, yeah, that was probably mine, apart from Friday night at Villa.
But every every worst game, does it have to be 0-0? Because we've all said 0-0,
no,
yeah?
No, it doesn't have
Could
to
there
be
a worse game that had... I mean, because Villa, Southampton was pretty bad, and that's 1-0.
But you guys know I hate low-quality football matches. I am a
see,
football
snob.
See,
this is where you're all elitist, no. You see. Tony, I think you're right. Any game that I would have gone to watch Lincoln play, if there'd been a goal, I'd have been buzzing. Oh, absolutely delighted. Absolutely delighted. So from my point of view, it kind of has to be a 0-0.
The criteria
if it's 2-1 and it's crap football, that's not a bad afternoon out there.
Right, listen, before we end the podcast, there is a bit of fun to be had, a little bit more fun to be had. Tom Clark's brought in a quiz.
Okay, like all good editors when they leave any copy out of the paper yesterday, Bill Edgar came up with the list of all top flight hat tricks by substitutes. I'm going to give you the game and the scores. I want you to give me the player, okay? Who scored a hat-trick or coming off the bench. May 1992, West Ham 3, Nottingham Forest 0. Who is the player? Tony, come on, I'm looking at you.
92. Oh, well, McAvenny.
Correct, Tony Cascarino. Nice, easy one. Whoever shouts out first. February 1999, Nottingham Forest 0, Man United 8.
Off the bench, Solskjaer.
Well done, Hugh. March 2005, Charlton 1, West Brom 4.
2005.
Oh, yeah. I know that one. Oh.
Jason Roberts?
No.
Ellington.
No. Little lad.
Earnshaw.
Morrison.
Earnshaw.
Yeah.
Incorrect. April 2008, Derby 2, Arsenal 6.
Van Persie.
Nope.
Off the bench.
Franny Jeffers.
No.
Is that too late?
2006, you said.
2008.
Oh,
2008.
Cesc. No. Moving on. Adebayor.
Oh.
him.
May 2013, West Brom 5, Man United 5.
Oh, Lukaku.
Correct. September 2015, and this is a tricky one. Everton 3, Chelsea 1. And one of this player's goals came in the 17th minute, so he's clearly an early substitute.
Everton 3, Chelsea 1. What year?
Scottish forward.
Oh, James McFadden.
No. The other one.
Scottish forward for Everton.
Stephen Naismith.
I'd never got that. I would never have done that.
I would never have got that, actually. No, I wouldn't.
You did very well.
Okay, all right, brilliant. A bit of fun to end the podcast. Thank you all for listening. Alison, Tony, Tom, thank you for being with me. Thank you all for listening for the past hour or so. Remember, subscribe to the podcast, or if you want more of our great journalism, another big week ahead of us, then make sure you check it out at thetimes.co.uk/the game. We'll see you very soon.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.